When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And welcome back, Rugby Rant fans, episode 169, the Doug Glatt special, Doug the Thug. You're a hockey fan.
It's an obvious reference, man. That went over my head. And I like to consider myself a hockey connoisseur on occasion.
That's a great movie, a great hockey movie. Anyway, guys, we're here. It's another episode of the Rugby Rant 169. I'm the big guy, Scott Farrar. That is Rob the Hammer Hammerschmidt.
Yo!
Unfortunately, our boy James Dealey couldn't be here tonight, and also Ty couldn't be here tonight. But you got us. OG crew still rocking.
I heard Dealey had a migraine from chucking through all the numbers from the weekend, so he needed a...
He had to do his hair or something? I don't know.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know.
It's just hair.
That's like all right.
Marsha Brady. 4,999. 5,000. But no, shout out to MLR stats. It's a great week for rugby. We had another great set of rugby matches over the weekend, and we have a great slate coming up. Before we get to that, doing all that, we're going to hit our round the pitch. Hammer, why don't you kick us off with the first round of the pitch topic?
Oh, abso-stinking-lutely. So, interestingly, you know, sometimes I don't think we pay enough homage to our friends north of the border up there in Canada. So we got to appease Doug Wilkie. We got to appease the Gazzas. We got to appease those folks at La Rouge. And so I want to just talk briefly about the East Coast Rugby Championship. It does involve a little bit of a crossover. It is an academy championship. A couple of things I like about this. Let me first explain East Coast, West Coast Division, the Free Jacks Academy, Rugby Quebec, and the Arrows Seniors. What do I like about this? Well, there's two of them packed into the West Coast. First, you got the Free Jacks involved, so it involves that, again, cross-border competition. Second, the Arrows in some form are alive and well. And so I love the fact that there's a piece of Bill Webb still alive and kicking. And that's good news. And then on the East, you got the Rugby New Brunswick. You got Nova Scotia Celtics and the Rock Atlanta, Atlantic Rock, excuse me, out of St. John's, Newfoundland. They compete in a spring 2024 championship. So that's very interesting and good news for Canadian rugby. And of course, it's good to see a little bit of a slice of America involved. And so that's what I like.
Love to hear it. And it's pronounced Newfoundland. My buddies are Newfies in the Canadian military. Playing hockey. You know, it's Newfoundland. So you know. Shout out to Terry Ryan Jr. But listen, it is good to see the academy still rocking up there. Again, Bill Webb's legacy lives on strong, not only on the pitch while the guys are playing, but in everybody's hearts. We truly miss him. He was one of the guys pushing MLR and professional rugby and creating a solid pathway to the Rugby Canada side. So, you know, definitely miss him, but glad to see it's happening for the youth side. So I'm going to grab the next one. So for those of you who may have missed it, we had an international match. The Eagles ended up playing South Africa over in the UK. The women played South Africa with a big win, finishing up the match 38-17. You also had a hat trick hero in Georgie Paris Redding, the flanker coming in. I mean, she scored off the bat first minute in. They had a knock on the opening kick. And she took that knock on all the way down the sideline to score. And to be honest, you know, South Africa didn't score any tries till the second half. And by then it was too little too late with, you know, three tries coming in the first half and three tries coming in the second half for the Eagles. And Gabby Quarterna, she was 4 out of 6 in her conversions. You know, we were scoring from everywhere. It was nice to see. Kate Zachary captaining that team, doing a little bit of a jersey swap at the end. Our girl Tess Fury played all 80 minutes at 15. You had Catherine Trader, another scorer. She was starting at hooker. You know, Lottie Clapp capped it off at the end in the 58th minute to score the final try for US. And again, the ladies won 38-17 against the box. And speaking of internationals, I know you guys have seen it, but the big guy, definitely going to DC for the Scotland match, right? And the Hammer is looking to go to the Chicago match in against Romania the week before. We're hoping our boy Rob Aramescu is going to be there.
Yes,
I'm going to tell Rob.
I finally get to meet the
you
man.
You get to meet Rob, but I'm going to tell Rob. I want a kit. I got to tell my buddy Robbie. I want a kit to give to you to send to me from that match. So I'm going to hound him for that in his dreams. But, you know, it's good to see. So I'm going to be there in D.C. as we take on Scotland, and Hammer's going to be there in the week before in Chicago as they take on Romania. So get your tickets now. Come let us know where you're sitting, hanging out. We're going to be doing social media. We're going to be doing interviews. You know, if you know us, come interview with us. It's going to be a fun time. Hammer, what's your second topic, brother?
Well, you know me, I like to talk about grassroots rugby, and part of that is the college landscape. And we got bad news about a month or so ago, and that Notre Dame College, not Notre Dame. Thank you, Justin Hennecke. I threw a shout out to him last week on the sideline, but Notre Dame College, we found out was going to be closing its rugby doors, and they've had two very quality programs in both men's and women's. The men won two major titles. The women had qualified for the finals as well in recent years. Unfortunately, due to financial constraints and concerns, they had to shutter their doors. But the good news is, if there is some good news or a silver lining to take out of this, the university worked very hard with some other universities to look to see where these young men and women could transfer to so they could continue to get their education as well as play high-level rugby. And Walsh University opted to adopt the Notre Dame College programs. They share some similarities in terms of college majors. And so this is in North Canton, Ohio. They're going to honor the transfers, as I said, and it's really good news because ultimately we just want to see rugby continue. And thank you to Walsh University for their willingness to step up and support college rugby. We appreciate it, Walsh University. Thank you so much. And we will be rooting for each and every one of the players and the university itself at both the men's and women's levels.
Well, you know, it's good to hear that the men and women will be getting to play somewhere else and continue their career and hopefully have as little, stalling of their collegiate career as possible, whether it's, you know, because they're transferring all their credits. And, you know, as we know, you know, from experience, you know, if you want to transfer, sometimes credits don't go through and this, that, and the other thing. So it's glad to see that they're working together to get these kids, you know, on track and back into a program where they can continue their major and get their degree, which is the most important part, and play rugby at the same time. So it's good to hear that. So I'm going with my second topic, and this might be a surprise to everybody, including the Hammer, but so, as you know, MLR has the 20-minute red card law, right? And they've trialed it. They're putting it out. You know, World Rugby's putting it out as the law. So, World Rugby, due to some, I guess, lashback at that law, and people, you know, think it's unfair, they're coming out with a new law, right? World Rugby. So I'm just going to read this from their Instagram post. During a match, each team will be allowed one power play. The period will be lasting 10 minutes in that power play, during which they can bring on an additional player, increasing team size temporarily from 15 to 16 players. This period can be activated by the team captain at any time period during the match and can only be used once per team per match, not per half, per match. So you're going to get a power play for a 10-minute period in a match. You know, and it's really nice. I think it's going to change the way some of these teams are driven offensively. It's obviously, you know, meant to bring more points to rugby, make it more exciting in rugby union. I mean, we just had the advent of the NRL over in Vegas, and that was a big successful event. About 45 to 50,000 people attended that event. They're still talking about it. And I think this is rugby union's way of, you know, changing the rule to get some more offensive output. And Rob, you know, do you know who the new, it's the new head of officiating is at World Rugby?
I don't know.
And her name is April Fools. I got you, everybody. It's a little joke.
Yeah, you did. You shout did. Out to World and Rugby. Especially, you know, it they is put April Fools in the day of recording here.
Yeah. It's Monday. It's April Fools. I know you guys won't be seeing this till Thursday or Friday or Saturday, depending on when you're watching or listening, but I had to throw in an April Fools joke. But seriously, you know, I think it's one of those things where as the new law is thought out, you're going to see some wacky ideas, and that doesn't mean we're going to implement them all. But, you know, hey, keep thinking outside the box to help us with the game, Hammer, you know?
Yeah. And I know there's been a lot of banter and discussion about the officials thus far through week five. And I guess I would say, when are people going to stop complaining about officiating all the time? Right. I don't mean to demean anybody. I know we are always looking for officiating to improve, but we've also got to keep in mind that they are working on it every single day, every single week. It's been at the forefront. And I spoke with Derek Summers actually on Saturday's match. And, you know, I just asked him before the match, I said, hey, are you guys going to be looking at anything? And he said, yeah, we don't want to see any after the play now activities, right? And it's so something that they're looking at. And if we looked at last weekend's slate of matches, this was an area of emphasis. And I'll probably mention when we get to our rant some of the ways in which this materialized. But, you know, remember, guys, TMO, clear and obvious foul play. I think they've been fairly consistent on when the TMO inserts himself into play. It's when it's clear and obvious foul play. Otherwise, leave it up to the match official.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you're right. Again, I'm always the type of person, if you didn't win by 50 points, you know, don't complain about anything, to be quite honest. That's not to say I do believe that, you know, officials should be held responsible if there's, you know, really in insidious and these attempt to injure type of plays. And that usually that type of stuff is what happens on the back end of things where punches are thrown. So I'm glad they're emphasizing to stop that. But you also have to remember, you know, this isn't hockey where there's two guys, you know, two officials,
right,
you know, can call plays, and you have, you know, all, you know, officials that are just linesmen, and, you know, the TMO is the TMO, but again, they're not as proactive as we would like them to be, I think, sometimes, because it does slow down the game. It seems as though we want them to be proactive. We then complain that they're too proactive and it slows down the game. So,
right.
There is,
and it's a case in point with that kick, right? Mm-hmm. On Saturday's, was it Saturday's or Friday night's match?
Friday
I guess
night,
it
yeah.
was. Yeah, you know, the kick, a lot of people were like, why didn't he get more than that? There was an attempt to kick him in the head. And the question is, when it comes down to it, was there contact with the head or neck?
Yeah.
No.
As we've said time and time again, they've started to not only tell you the law, intent doesn't matter. They've drilled it into the official's head. Intent doesn't matter. What's the result, right? What was the result? As we saw with Jameson Fonten on a Schultz, right? What's the result? Did he hit him in the air? Yes. That's the red card. That's he goes off the pitch.
Did Billy land on his head and neck?
Yeah. Did Billy Meeks go up to create a penalty? Yes, he did. He knew his best chance of getting the ball was going up against a forward. And most likely the forward was going to touch him that close. Let's be honest. He knew what he was doing. He's that's part of the game. Now we could talk about later on, you know, in later things, the suspension and, you know, what we agree and disagree on, but that's plain as day. He went up. Jameson Fanon-Schultz touched him. That's the card, right?
Yep.
So you can't complain about that. But you know, before we get right into it, what Rob was referencing before, our topic is we're going to talk and we're going to take a look at the Miami Sharks versus the San Diego Legion match that happened over the weekend on Sunday, excuse me. And kind of talk about, you know, it was a close match and are we seeing more parity in the league now in some of these teams and what's going on with that? So before we do that, we're going to catch a word from one of our sponsors.
When we pick up the ball, we also pick up a legacy. A legacy that stretches beyond your current team. A legacy built on the backs of those who came before you with hard work. And for those who will come after you, we promise it won't be easy. But we'll be there, supporting you on and off the field.
And like we talked about before the break, we're going to kind of be breaking down that Miami-San Diego match over the weekend. And let me just give you the statistics. San Diego come roaring back, winning 22-21 down in Fort Lauderdale against the Miami Sharks. It was a great match. You know, kickoff, I believe, was 6:30 Eastern on Easter Sunday. And for me, Hammer, I got to be quite honest, it was tough to watch because by like 2 o'clock, I had full belly. I was going downhill. I had smoked this rack of ribs. I did a full pork, a full bone and ham. My brother's girlfriend only eats chicken or turkey, so my mother made a chicken parm with chicken cutlets. You know, Italian meat and cheeses. We had all the Italian favorites, the pizza rustica, the mugliats, the tarals. You know, plus dessert. My dad made a cheesecake and yada yada yada. So by the time 6:30 kickoff,
I have a question: did your little guy chef? Did he get to, you know, embrace making a little of the gravy?
Yeah,
come on now.
Listen, he's going to be 9 months soon, so he's a little far from getting in the kitchen. But I mean, he had his prune and pear puree that day. But but seriously, it was a good match. It was fun. It was all, you know, Miami first half, San Diego second half. Like we said, down in Fort Lauderdale, you talk about some of the disciplinary issues. We had the yellow card for Hugh Roach later in the first half. You had, you know, I think Miami took 7 penalty kicks. Echeverria only converted 3. Excuse me. My throat's starting to go. But, I mean, what do you think about this match, Hammer? We talk about parity. Give us your opinion here.
It's kind of funny as I'm watching the match, especially in the second half, I began to think I was having a bit of deja vu at the day. And I actually taped it. I didn't watch it on Sunday. I watched it today on Monday, the day of the recording. And I thought I was dreaming and being taken back in time to Saturday when I was on the sideline for the Hounds match against Seattle, which was also a tale of two halves. Right. And I saw some of the same things happening during the course of the match. An excellently played match by the home team through the first half, only to see that match and their lead start to slip away slowly but surely, and in some part to errors. And they were fixable errors. And so for the Hounds, it was handling errors and opportunities in scoring position. In the case of Miami, it was penalties. It was some handling errors, and it was some poor kicking, especially Echeverry had an opportunity to kick to slot one that was probably about 30 out, dead center. You would have thought if there was a kick that could have been made that would have done it, that was it. It would have been 24 at that point, I think, to 5. And it certainly would have been a tough mountain to climb for Danny Lee and his boys. And you could see at the end of the match, Danny Lee's response to winning the match is this, you know, sigh of relief, like, wow, we got that one out. But there was a lot of things in this match to discuss for sure.
Absolutely, Hammer. You know, you talk about the kicking. I got to be honest, and I this is one of those things I always feel like, you know, we talk about in football too. Like, you have to own your home pitch when you're kicking.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's all the way left, all the way right, all the way back. You know, your kicker in your home pitch has to be nailing all those kicks, right? And any one of those kicks is a kick that wins them the match later on, you know? And again, as we talked about kind of in the first time, I'm usually not one to complain about, you know, a single performance, but I do feel like, you know, missing four of those kicks, is it puts you in a tough spot because you chose to do the penalty.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, real quick, just those kicks coming at the first three he converted were all early in the first half. And my point being, you know, it's great to get those points on the board against San Diego, but are those 3-point attempts always going to hold you over against the San Diego Legion team who's looking to win the league this year?
Right. And to that point, Scott, here's my question for you. 32 minutes into that first half with a very, very good lead. I think it was 21-5 at that juncture for Miami.
Yes.
They get a penalty. And I think it was the one I was speaking of earlier where it's right about 30, 35 meters out. It totally kickable, dead straight. But I thought to myself at that time, you know, do you put the screws to them? Do you go to the corner? It's your home pitch. We know that the driving maul is an effective way to score points. Do you kick to the corner and really put the pressure on? And if you get it held up, you get the ball back. You know, you should be able to draw the penalty potentially. And, you know, clearly with some of the running rugby they were doing in the first half, you know, if they just methodically hold on to the ball and look for opportunities, there's an opportunity to put some more points on the board.
And Rob, what happened 2 minutes before that? Hugh Roach was yellow carded for stomping on the opponent's ankle. So Legion were down a man. Why wouldn't you try and kick it to the corner? Right. Their starting hooker is now out.
Yep.
So, you know, one of their starting forwards is out. Now, don't get me wrong. You put in your reserve hooker and as substitutions go, you should be just as excited, you know, when the next guy comes in, it's next man up, whatever, whatever. But my point is there has to be something psychologically going on to say, man, we got to shove it down their throat and put their foot on the gas. And this is indicative of a style of South American play that we see quite often with the kicking and the kicking and the kicking. And you're in your home stadium on your home turf. Up a man, that man who's out is a forward. So even if your rolling maul stalls, you still have an extra man out there in your line. Make something happen in within the 10 meters in the green zone. Like I've talked about this on the show quite often, where for some reason nobody can make those adjustments on the pitch. You know, like as a professional player, it shouldn't be in your mind to kick the damn points. Somebody should have went up to him and say, don't make that decision. Kick to the fucking corner. Like, I don't get that. It doesn't make sense to me, especially with a team like San Diego, who's looking to beat you up front, who's looking to beat you with a back line, who's looking to counter kick you to hell. And hopefully you make a mistake because they're looking for 5 points at all times. I mean, I don't think they even had an opportunity to really take a penalty kick. They went, they had two opportunities and, you know, but they, again, late in the match to try and take, you know, you're taking your winning points there at that point. You know what I mean? But again, that's when it's close. But my point is first half, stay on the gas, all gas, no brakes. I don't understand, Rob.
Yeah. I think it's especially critical to think about that decision within the context of where you are in the season. Remember, we're looking to get bonus points for tries. And with Miami behind already 5 weeks in, you know, and just in terms of the points table, I mean, looking at the points table, you've got and I'm just clicking back over to it. You've got Miami who's sitting with 7 points and you got Chicago. And this is at the conclusion of the weekend, but you know, they're nipping at the heels of Chicago, right? So why not try to get that extra bonus point in that juncture to get you more in the hunt? It's not like it's not, you know, it's a different story if you're talking about playoffs, right? Where it doesn't matter to get the bonus point, to get those extra tries, to keep it within seven. That doesn't matter in the playoffs, just about to win, right? But this is a little different scenario against a little different team. And I just want to ask you to take a minute and talk to folks and give your opinion. You know, is there parity? Are we seeing, is this game represent the parity that exists? Because by my numbers, you have a 4-1 team going into this game and a 1-4 team going into this game who are separated by 12 points prior to this match. And yet Miami takes them to the wire.
I think it's two things. One, I think crossing the coast is hard. I don't think the teams have necessarily mastered that yet. Especially on a Sunday, you know, you're traveling on Saturday, probably one of the bigger travel days of the year as people are trying to get home from Easter. I'm sure as much as you want to say it professionally, you can take care of it. You know, this isn't the Green Bay Packers taking up a whole flight, you know what I mean? And they're all on their own, you know?
Or a charter for that matter.
Yeah, you know, so I mean, you know, it's, I think they haven't perfected that yet. I don't think that you're ever going to perfect it unless you have your own charter flights or you can book a full jetliner, unfortunately. And I do think it's that time of the season where, what was it, week five? This is week five? That was week five last week?
Yeah, it was week five.
You know, you're going to start to see guys get rest. You're going to start to see, you know, some difference in the lineups, especially when you're going against a team in a different conference, because the loss isn't going to hurt as much. Right.
Right.
Head
to head against somebody in your
conference. It's not head to head. Exactly. So, yep. So those, that point differential is really doubled as far as table points concerned. Right. Yep. But going back to your point about why try and kick for post there. If you look at the Miami Sharks lineup, you know, our buddy Jonas Petrakopoulos started at prop, Kirby Myhill at hooker, and my buddy Alec McDonald starting at the other prop. And they all got taken out. Jonas and Kirby got taken out in the 44th minute, and Alec stayed in until the 55th minute. And replacing Alec was Tavita Solé, who was just traded from New England. So he's relatively new. So if you have guys like Jonas and Alec there who've been there the entire season so far, and yes, they're young props and it's hard to match up with what San Diego has prop wise. That doesn't mean, again, they had the momentum at that point. I don't understand what you're doing. You know what I mean? It doesn't make sense to me. Give those guys some confidence. And yeah. You took them out 4 minutes into the second half. That just seems weird to me. You know, I mean, maybe guys are getting tired again. You're getting beat up by you know, some big dudes on the Legion. But, I mean, the Legion, let's see. I mean, Hugh Roach went to the 70th minute, but again, he also had a 10-minute break. And Darcy Breen, full 80 minutes for the Legion. And Pifoletti got taken out in the 51st minute. But my point is, if you're going against a prop who's sitting there for 80 minutes, and you're putting in your backup at 44. So maybe, you know, hindsight being 20/20, it's a good idea, right? You're putting in a guy who's has 40 minutes or, you know, whatever, 36 minutes he didn't play, right? But, you know, again, it just, I don't know. It seems weird to me that they made those choices that early as well. It's like something's up. Like they're not trusting them to get the job done. And that doesn't make sense to me. Yeah. You have to instill confidence. And instilling confidence, in my opinion, unless they're hurt, and I don't think both, you know, your prop and your hooker were hurt at the same time to take them out, you know?
Yeah, and it's interesting. You go back to personnel issues that you were just speaking to, and I think Miami was missing four of their starters from the previous week. And then they mentioned on the broadcast that San Diego was missing six of their starters from the previous week. And, you know, going to the point of parity, you know, is there parity or did just, you know, just Miami catch San Diego with, you know, crossing the coast with, you know, San Diego having six guys out, you know, just the difficulty of travel that goes along with crossing the coast, you know, some of those challenges. They didn't have their starting number nine, who's had really, really, McClutchkey's had some really good season. Mm-hmm. I think McClutchkey started actually at 10. You know, so if I'm not mistaken, so, yes, you know, did those things factor into it? Yeah, I still think that the parity is there, we have a lot of parity in the league, and there are these opportunities for teams that are lower in the conference standings to catch up and catch some of these teams that are at their top. I mean, if you look at the other side, you know, we had a cross conference battle between the Hounds and Seattle, and the Hounds were winning that match throughout most of the match up until the last, I think this is the last 5 minutes.
Yep.
And which Seattle caught him and then, you know, put a last try out of desperation by the Hounds to try to, mm-hmm. to get that, you know, to get themselves back on top, you know, with Seattle being 4-1, 19 points in the West, and Chicago being, tied for fourth, I believe it actually. Yeah. Tied for fourth, and being 1-3-1 with 8 points, you know, that was a really tight match given all that happened.
I mean, you have to look at the Friday match, Dallas yeah. Jackals and Houston Sabercats. Yeah. Sabercats, you know, having to kick a penalty within the 79th minute. So I think what's happening here is you're seeing the teams, there's even Anthem scoring a lot of points. They're starting to
gel. Yeah, they are.
Offensively, defensively, they have a lot to work on. And in my opinion, they haven't found their guy to cop it out yet. And that's just one of those things that's going to take time. Miami, I think, was at a particular advantage because obviously, you know, being announced earlier than Anthem, yeah. Signing their players a little earlier, it's still going to take time to gel because it's a new team, new space, new players coming together. And don't get me wrong. There's guys who've played together, you know, a little bit there, but you know, it's always a learning curve with those teams. But again, they were more ahead of the game, you know, and same thing with LA. Yeah. LA's starting to gel, right? And they have quite a few guys who've played together. So I think, but LA also didn't have much of a preseason quite like Anthem, you know, but I do think LA will gel better both offensively and defensively quicker than Anthem would. So is there parity? Yes. But I think if the league can stay stable, there's not much of a shakeup in a particular organization going into next year. I think you're going to see these tighter games happen by week two and week three versus week five, week four, week five, week six against all these teams.
Yeah. Well, and I got to ask you this. While we're talking about Miami, what is their identity? Because we always, it seems to be that people are throwing around this idea that Miami is this very fast, exciting, creative, exciting brand of rugby, which everybody wants to see. And don't get me wrong, there are points in the match, and we saw it on Sunday, in which you saw sparks of that where you went, oh, yes. That's what I like to see. One in particular, in Karate, their number nine, there was a penalty, took a quick one, a quick tap, and there was a really nice break and run. It eventually came to a halt, but those are the kind of exciting things you like to see, right? But what's odd is you look at the statistics, and let me just throw something at you if I can quickly find it.
Sure.
So you think that the Miami Sharks would have a lot of passes, right? Because they're this very creative team that is very exciting, et cetera, et cetera. End of the day, their Miami's total passes, pass distance. I'm just going to go pass distance. This is on sportable tracking, ball tracking. 469 meters to San Diego's 1,022.
Okay, I'm gonna say a few words here.
And let me throw one thing at you, okay. And I'm looking for you to respond. In contrast, kicking 1,054 by Miami meters kicked to 858 meters kicked by San Diego. So you'd think they would bring that exciting, very fast and loose play, but it's actually not. They're a very kicking or kick oriented mm-hmm. team.
And you want to talk about less passing meters. I'll give you a couple words here. Nick Boyer, Ryan James, Tion Lutz, Mikey Tail, Marcel Brocky, guys who are good on the defensive side of the ball. So, you know, when we talk about effective tackling, right, we talk about a technique that can get you one, the first guy bringing down the ball carrier, the second guy coming in and trying to cover on a counter ruck. Those guys I mentioned are very high successful percentages of tackling one-on-one and bringing the guy down. So what is Miami looking to do? They're looking to try and pass the ball. But also, one of the issues, and we've seen this happen in years prior with teams, is that extra offload that's killing you.
Yeah.
So, again, I think Miami hasn't found their balance. Right. Unfortunately, their default position for some of their internationals is kick the ball, is that South American style of kick the ball. And we know that that's not necessarily effective in this league. And that's not effective for a lot of the players in this league. So again, it goes, I think it goes back to my first comments about adjusting. They have to have a sit down with those guys and say, it can't just be about the counter kick, especially I didn't feel Miami's countering their kicks well. Toronto Arrows used to be very good at it, where they would kick the ball and they would be so far up, you know, towards the next game line that, you know, it was almost like three or four guys were in on that kick and making the guy receiving it nervous. Right. And then the mistake would happen and hopefully you'd go down and score. I didn't see that much urgency. To me, it felt like they were waiting for the counter kick to come back. And again, that's, South America style. Okay. We're going to kick the ball back. English style. We're going to kick the ball back. And that's not really what San Diego does. You know, I mean, they do it strategically. San Diego does do that. Gives their guys a break a little bit, but not necessarily for the offensive power I think they're looking for.
Right. And I think you're right. I think that at times when Echeverry, for example, and their nine in Kearte, chose to take off and run with the ball, I don't
way more know, successful.
Well, I don't know that sometimes they always had the support of the rest of the team with them. And they try to
run was successful. And then when they realized they didn't have support,
right,
that's when they made the mistake of doing the extra move.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Yes.
We're on the same page with that. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, does that come, as you say, going into season two for the Miami Sharks, when they've had more time to gel, when they perhaps had a fall season for some of those players to get an opportunity to play more consistent rugby with one another? Do they get more continuity? Do they understand where to be because they know they're going to get a quick tap and go, because they know that they're going to, you know, make a break and what shoulder to be off of? I think you saw that continuity with some of the tries put forward by San Diego. They had a sublime try that went through about five different sets of hands that edged them right into that match. And then I think the kick is it was the one that won it for him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think also we talk about culture. You can't build culture instantly. And again, having no inside knowledge of what was going on in Miami's mind, maybe they were too, I wouldn't say scared, but maybe they were a little apprehensive of that moment to say, oh God, we're up big on a really good team who came into our house, who's been a powerhouse, right? And maybe they just kind of, you know, unfortunately let it go afterwards. What is it? Was 38 special? Hold on loosely, but don't let go. Right.
Yeah.
If you squeeze too tightly, you're going to lose control.
Yeah.
I think, you know, that could be a mindset for guys. And that's not to say not the culture's not there or the culture's bad, but, you know, it takes a while to build that mindset of just like, make the play and don't worry about the mistakes. I don't know if maybe they're not gelling at that point yet to do that.
It's funny you mention that because, and again, I at the top of our discussion, I talked about the similarities that I felt to the match between the Hounds and Seattle. And I said that very same thing when I was speaking to some of the players after the game. I talked to JP Smith. I had a good conversation with Clarkey, the coach of Alan Clark, the coach of Seattle. I talked with some of the players from the and coach from the Hounds. Is that the difference? I think in that game was that Seattle, and I think we see this with San Diego very similarly. Seattle has been in that moment before. They've been from behind. They've had to play from behind. They've been in tight matches. I mean, we need to go back to the first ever MLR final against Colorado, if I'm not mistaken. And yes, there's been a lot of changeover, but there are a core of players. And I'm talking about, you know, man of the match, JP Smith. I'm talking about Reichert Hadding, that form the foundation of that team. And they have long established culture. They don't need to talk about it. As Sam Harris said, if you have it, you don't talk about it. And they have that culture. They have that expectation. They believe in Clarkey. They believe in the system. They believe in one another. They play for one another. And it's not to say that the Hounds or Miami don't. It just takes time. With 60% turnover for the Hounds, it's just going to take time for those boys to get that mix and get in those positions to feel like we can, even when we're down, we can win. When we're in tight matches, we're going to pull it out.
And let's pull it back to Friday night. Look at Dallas Jackals. Dallas Jackals have had so much turnover in the past 3 years in their roster. again, I don't think a culture was necessarily built, right? When you look right. at the Sabercats, while the Sabercats have had turnover, you still have guys there like Tiana Rasmus, Dom Aquina, Christian Dyer, Carlo Denison, you know, who've been there for a while. And then you have guys who come in like Lerone White, Jeremy Misigalu, you know, Justin Besson, Johan Momsen, Marlo Rendlingheis, who came from other teams eventually, right? And but they've all been on teams that had built cultures before, whether it was Atlanta or New York or, you know, ill-fated in Austin or, you know, Utah or wherever they came from. So because they've been in the league a little while and kind of know that Houston has a culture, I think some of those guys, they could buy in because they've seen it other places.
Right. Well, and let's not forget, obviously, with the coaching staff, they're in the third season, if not mistaken, yeah. under the direction of Heinicke Meyer and mm-hmm. and Pote Human. Right. They're in their third season. So the expectations are clearly established. Mm-hmm. There's a core of players that have lived under those expectations and understand what they are, and that they practice those and they make it part of what they do, what they say, and how they work and operate. So they've had an opportunity to establish this, and it's just going to take time for some of these newer teams to be able to find that, find their footing in that regard.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think we've kind of flushed out this topic between the last 2 weeks, again, I don't think any of these teams are on the wrong track. Again, I don't think any of these teams have bad culture. I just think the culture hasn't flourished as greatly in some of the teams yet as it has in other teams. I think we're seeing that. And I think Dallas is a good example of it's right on they had that upturn. They're just so close, but they're just that far away, the game of inches. But it's way better than what we've seen in the past from them. And, I think that's if we talk about parity in the league, I think the standard really would want to look at is Dallas and their climb.
Yeah.
Again, their record might not be showing the success, but we're watching the matches. The games look, they're not being pushed back into the frigging goalposts like they were against Rooney, right? In the scrum.
Right.
They're not having these, really boneheaded plays all the time. Don't get me wrong. You're going to have the bonehead pass out of bounds because, again, you're doing that extra pass. You're going to have that bonehead play every once in a while, but it was kind of like a calamity of errors sometimes with Dallas. You're seeing way better rugby. You're seeing the culture start to be built there. And I think that is really our marker for parity.
Yeah. Agreed. For the Rick Collins's heart. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think things are going in the right direction down in Dallas. It's good to see.
Yep. So we're going to be at that point and we're going to talk about our lock of the week.
The Rugby Rants lock of the week.
So Rob, what's your lock of the week for this week here?
Well, let's go through the games. We've got Anthem at Utah. We got Dallas at Seattle. That's on both those Friday night. Hounds down in NOLA. I'll be at that match. If you're down there, come say hello. I'll be down there as of the release of this video on Friday night. Miami at New England and LA at DC, all happening on Saturday. And my lock of the week is New England over Miami. We know that Fort Quincy is a very, very difficult place to play. They have a great crowd. They get behind their boys, and New England is rolling right now. Miami's still finding their footing, trying to find their identity. It's going to be difficult to play up there. Watch. Let's see what it looks like. A difficult adjustment going from South Beach up to Boston, Mass. So I'm giving New England the nudge by 10.
Interesting. I like that. But I also know sometimes New England comes off a bye week and it's not necessarily their best performance. And that's not to say that won't change this season. I'm just saying historically a lot of teams come off a bye week and have an issue. So let's talk about my lock of the week. My lock of the week is going to be Seattle over Dallas. This is what I think is going to happen. I think Dallas, even though they played great the other day, they had a heartbreaker of a loss. They're going to want to be, I think they've used some of their juice. And I think they're just going to have a tough time going over to Starfire, again, crossing a couple time zones, going north. Who knows what the weather is going to be like at this point. I don't want to, say anything because, Pacific Northwest, it could rain at any point. And I think Seattle's going to want to say, hey, we squeaked out one last week against the Hounds. We're at home. Again, all throttle, no gas. I'm going to go Seattle by 12. I'm going to say, yeah, a converted try and an unconverted try. But I think Seattle's going to handle Dallas. So yeah, Seattle minus 12 up and home.
I like that. I like that pick. That's a good one. So some great slate of games. Again, we have a full slate. Now we're running five of six now. So, you know, a little better than last week, one more than last week, but it'll be a good slate of games this weekend. As I said, I'll be down in New Orleans for that one. And yes, indeedy, Nicky Feeks, not an April Fool's joke. Just got confirmation from my man, Nick Feeks, the Mongoose. He is already down in NOLA. So I will be seeing him. We'll see if he gets rostered on the 23 for the weekend. But I want to throw a shout out. First of all, thank you very much to Rugby Now and ShopMLR for sponsoring our Super Brew contest this season. Once again, huge supporters. Can't say enough about what they do. And let me tell you, if you haven't got your Super Brew merch, ShopMLR merch, get it now. They said got some great deals on the Paladin stuff, but they've got some the Kappa stuff rolling out right now. The Anthem hopefully should be coming out mid-season, but the LA stuff is already out. It looks awesome. They have a fine selection on shopmlr.com. We have some pretty great kit. I showed last week the Houndstooth. I'll put on next week the White Houndstooth. I got that. But nevertheless, I want to throw a shout to Super Brew winner, week 5, Stephen Lowen. We talked about Houston. He is a big Houston fan, and he won himself a $25 gift card to ShopMLR. And I know they got some great Cats kit. They've got some really cool, not just jerseys, but the training shirts. So I know he's going to get himself some sweet merch.
Always good to win you some swag. Good job, Stephen. Appreciate you signing up. I know you've been with us for a couple years now. So appreciate you. But Rob, I think this one is done and dusted. Get your Super Brew picks in if you haven't done it. Join Super Brew now because you can still win weekly. And you'd be surprised people at the end of the season forget to put in their picks and you can win overall. You know, we do have top three winners of the overall get money every week. Top winner gets money. You know, get that Rugby Now money. Check out rugbynow.com for all your team needs. We're going to be coming to a spring season. Spring 7 summer tournaments, get all your equipment there. They had a special on cleat studs, Adidas cleat studs, as Rob put out on our social media the other day. And check out shopmlr.com to get your swag, baby. I'm Scott, the big guy Ferrara. That's Rob, the Hammer Hammerschmidt. 169 done and dusted. We'll see you guys at 170. Peace.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.